Well, thank you so much for joining us here on Cranford Radio. My name is Bernie Wagenblast. Actually, today's podcast is sort of a do-over, if you will. I'm joined by Gina Black. She is one of the commissioners on the Cranford Township Committee. And we had talked last in June of 2022. Unfortunately, there were some technical difficulties on my end, and Gina and I were the only ones to hear that interview. So we're going to try to redo that, hopefully with a little better luck this time. And if you're hearing this, that means we are having better luck this time around. Gina, thank you so much for rejoining me on Cranford Radio.
Very happy to join you again, Bernie.
As I have mentioned with some of the other interviews that I've done with various political representatives for Cranford, both at the state and township level, and even at the federal level, what I like to do is start off by a getting to know you type of interview to learn a little bit more about the person, not really focus so much on the issues, but learn a little bit about the person who is serving and representing Cranford, in this case, on the township committee. So why don't we start at the beginning? Tell me a little bit about where you grew up and how you came to Cranford.
Happy to help. I am so much happier to talk about this than so much more fun to talk about this than about politics, local politics especially. I grew up in Pennsylvania, Northeast Pennsylvania, up in the Poconos. So small town girl, loved to ski, brought up in the ski zone, grew up in Catholic school. There were two sisters and a brother, four of us all together. One of my sisters happens to be my identical twin. So she's the evil twin. I'm the good twin. Grew up in Pennsylvania, then went away to college and then moved to New Jersey, to Edison, New Jersey, and then ended up in Cranford a year later. So I've been in Cranford for over 30 years now.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Well, you mentioned you went to school. Where did you go to school and what was your major?
I went to Penn State. My major was chemistry. So I got my bachelor's in chemistry, came to work in New Jersey, got my master's along the way in medicinal chemistry, and have loved my career ever since. It's been a really fun career in chemistry.
You know, seeing as you work in medicinal chemistry, obviously New Jersey is one of the key places for the pharmaceutical industry. I'm assuming that you've spent some time working in the pharmaceutical industry.
You got it. It's Pharmaceutical Row, right? Yes. So I worked for Merck in Rahway, very close by, for 22 years. Had quite a bit of fun there and then moved on to another, Bristol Myers. It's a lot of the same people. It's a very relatively close-knit community, even amongst the pharmaceutical companies. So we meet a lot of people here and there that we move around. So it's a good community.
Well, I'm sure it has varied over the years, but doing medicinal chemistry, tell me a little bit about what's involved with that. You know, I can imagine it's changed over time, but tell me a little bit about some of the responsibilities that you've had in that area.
Sure. So I have always been in basic research, so meaning right at the ground floor. So we have disease targets that we identify, generally would start with some kind of idea of what we needed to do in terms of what kinds of chemicals or compounds that we needed to create to be active, but it's a lot of art. So you're just designing, getting data, collecting the data, and then using that feedback to create new entities. Again, to keep going back to the drawing board, go back and test and see if you're improving on activity against whatever the target disease class is. So I've worked with a lot of different disease classes for immunocompromised people, a lot of pneumocystis and antifungal diseases, diabetes, obesity, you name it, many, many different disease classes out there. I started out as a bench chemist, just pure synthetic chemistry, just creating a lot of these drug molecules. And then with the medicinal chemistry part of it comes in interpreting all that data and helping to design more. So my responsibilities grew on that side as I went along. And then a sort of a side path, a lot of the tools that I used in developing those drugs in terms of purifying and being able to isolate the actual entities. Drugs have to be very pure when you go to test them. And especially when we get to measuring toxicities, we have to know exactly what's in the mixture that we're dosing. The tools we use for that are purification tools. So I worked a lot with a lot of the instrumentation that we used to purify all of these initial drug molecules on small scale, but then following that all the way through, as we get active compounds that are very interesting, we have to make more and more material. We have to use bigger and bigger tools all the way up into the pilot plants to really make kilos, a really large amount of material in a pure state for further testing. So that made me a subject matter expert in that area. And that's really where my career path led. And that has been, again, very rewarding, very fun. I worked in the labs supporting a lot of the chemists in that role of providing those purification services. And then a few years back, maybe about 5 years ago, I kind of made a little bit of switch, I call it, to the dark side, working from using the instrumentation to more of the instrument vendor side, so selling the instrument. But I used a lot of, I'm not pure sales, I'm technical support, but providing that support to help people who are just getting into it, design their tools, get the right tools, customize everything to what their actual needs are. So it's a lot of fun. I get to broaden my scope from just the pharmaceutical world into food sciences and the oil industry and plastics. And I was at an Apple company, and I'm like, what does Apple do with chemistry and purification? They're developing plastics. So if you get a real insider's view on things that you don't really think about, how, you know, different tools are being used in different industries and the overlap between the different industries. So it's been a real fun career.
I can imagine. Now, I would also think, though, that working in that area, talking about when you're doing chemistry and developing drugs and putting together the molecules and everything that's involved with that, it's not a lot of instant gratification, because it takes years and years from where you first start the process before you get to a place where these drugs are being given to real live people and being used for treatment or prevention. So what's that like? You know, so many fields these days, and so much of life really, is about instant gratification, seeing the results from something that you're doing right away. How do you deal with that long lag between starting and seeing results?
That's a great question, because that I've definitely experienced that. You spend years and years developing these molecules and working deep into these projects, and you finally find this is a great molecule and it's a great accomplishment, and you're scaling it up, you're making more material, and all of a sudden one day you get one piece of data that shuts the whole project down, and then you have to go and basically start from scratch. That is very, very frustrating for everybody on the project, but especially if it's, you know, your own baby that you're kind of bringing forth. And that has happened to me. It has happened to almost everybody in the game. But when you do have a project, so I have to say that I got very lucky early on in my career. I don't know if it's lucky or not, but I was on a program. It definitely is luck, I will say that. But very early on in my career, I was involved in a program that actually became a drug. And when you get there and you get to the final launch party and you get to see all of the people that were involved in so many different parts of the development process and parts of the company to bring this forward, you get a real appreciation for it. It's not any one person's accomplishment. It's really quite the feat to bring a drug to market. There's, I guess, so many things going against it. So when it does finally get there, and then they have they do the clinical testing and they have interviews with all these patients that the drug we were making was an antifungal drug, and the only drug out there was nicknamed, it was amphotericin was the name of the drug, but it was named amphoterrible because of all the side effects. And you hear people, I mean, it was almost the cure was worse than the disease. Mm-hmm. But it was, you get to hear all these people thanking you and all the appreciation and the heartfelt appreciation for putting in all that work. That is really satisfying. And I got that, I got to experience that very early on. And again, I think that one probably was the most successful drug that I was directly involved with, but it was to know that you're part of the teams that are at least putting up the good fight and trying to find these solutions to a lot of really grave illnesses in the world. So.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned that you came to Cranford some 30 years ago, coming in from Edison. Before you decided to run for the township committee, I imagine you were involved with other things that didn't involve elections in town. So tell me a little bit about some of the other efforts and committees and volunteer things that you were doing in town before you ran for the township committee.
Sure. Well, so I've always been very involved. I mean, that started in high school, being, you know, on everything. We were a small high school, so we were involved in yearbook and all the sports, cheerleading and softball and plays, all of that. But as I, once I got out into the real world, I was just always active in different things, even things like sewing. I used to be in a sewing club very early on and very active in softball, always been co-ed softball all the way through my career, bowling, just social and keeping connected socially. When I had kids, I did get involved in the daycare center. We had an employee-run daycare center, so we had a board, a volunteer board there that ran. So I was part of that board for about 8 years through the two kids, including a part of time where it was so hard to get in there. My second child didn't even make it into the center. I still remained on the board, hoping and praying that he would get in, and he did. So I spent 8 years on that board until, you know, we moved through there. And that was probably a really good training ground for what I do now. I'll tell you what, new parents are probably the toughest crew to satisfy or to, you know, there's a lot of tough issues when you're new with this. And of course, the kids are one of the most important things to all of us. So that was a good experience there. And then, you know, as the kids were in school, just following their paths through school, involved with their soccer teams and soccer clubs and the baseball moms, and just getting involved locally with, more recently, with Centennial Village and, you know, our Republican committee in town, being very, very active there and just trying to do good things around town.
You know, you talked about how involved you were in high school, from sports to plays to the yearbook. Were you on student council? Did you run for student council either there or at Penn State when you were in college?
I did not. I had no involvement in student government and any of that. I was busy. I guess I was busy elsewhere, but yeah, I did not. I saved that for my second phase, I guess.
So was the township committee the first time you ever ran for any kind of office?
Yes, it's the first time I ever campaigned for anything. And
you talked about how involved you were with so many different activities. Did you just see that as sort of the natural evolution of being involved in town, was to run for the township committee?
No, I think that I got involved more because we all have different visions of where we want to be. I've been very invested in this town and just saw things going in a direction that I was a little concerned about in terms of specifically the overdevelopment. And it's not just here, it's everywhere. It's, you know, anywhere you go. I do travel a lot for my job now, and you see the development going on everywhere. And so I just wanted to have a voice in that. And you know, some people say you can sit on your sofa and cry about it, or you can actually get involved and have a voice. And so I felt strongly enough about it that I decided to put myself out there. So that's why I'm there.
What was that experience like, campaigning? Because that's a little bit different than governing. What was campaigning like for you?
Campaigning is the worst job in the world. And I am a doer, but I am not good at self-promotion. And I guess that just sounds like a little bit like self-promotion when you say it, right? But it really is a difficult thing. But when you feel strongly enough about it, you have to get out there and do the right thing. So it is tough. You're always trying to make an impression on people, and you have to do it fast, right? You only have a few months to get to know people and have them get to know you. I've never been one to get into a popularity contest, but that's really what it is. And it's a hard thing to do. I don't, you know, I just want to be real and have people around me that are, you know, like-minded, and well, not even that like-minded, but, you know, accepting of whoever you are and right back at you, you know, so likewise the other way.
You've had a couple of years on the township committee. What have been some of the biggest surprises of what the reality is like versus what maybe you anticipated being like before you actually were sworn into office?
So I think I went into this eyes wide open. I had spent enough time attending the meetings ahead of time. And I did campaign for 2 years before I actually got on, which again, being on, I feel is easier than campaigning part of it, because then you can actually get down to the work. I have been very happy about having the opportunity to ask a lot of questions. It is a little frustrating sometimes where, you know, you feel like the information flow isn't how you hoped it would be. I am a little surprised at how divided we can be on political lines, because the local business is not, there's no Republican or Democratic way to fill a pothole, but it always seems to become a competition. You know, and in dealing with issues, it's competition. And that is hard, because we do change leadership quite frequently in Cranford. Every year there's a new election, there are new people in town, and it's hard to get on a continuous path with things you start, you want to see them through. But it can be hard if there's a constant change in government. So it is a little difficult now to know or to see how hard it is to compromise these days. And that I think is true everywhere. Everything is extremes, even nationally, especially nationally. There's just seems to be harder to get people to listen to you and compromise.
A couple of things regarding that I want to ask you about. First of all, people who serve on the township committee, I think for the most part, view this as something they're doing to improve the town, regardless of what their positions are. It's a volunteer thing. They don't necessarily have their eyes set on some higher office. But because you're in the public light and you're one of five people that are making decisions, you can be subject to criticism. Again, regardless of which side of the aisle or which position you take, there's going to be people who are critical of whatever position you do take. How do you deal with that? Because maybe career politicians develop a tough skin. That's part of the job of being a professional politician, if you will. But at the township level, I don't really think we have professional politicians per se who are serving. How do you deal with those criticisms that you hear?
I'm not afraid of criticism. I think most of the time the criticisms are just people wanting to be heard. And so you just need to listen. A lot of people just want to have a chance to voice their opinions. And there's nothing wrong with agreeing to disagree. You know, I don't have any issue. I have a fairly thick skin for the most part. Some of it's thin, but I think in this light, I don't take anything personally here. And actually, that's campaigning teaches you a lot of that. It's nothing is personal. It's all, there's an end game, and things get said during a campaign that wouldn't probably be otherwise said. So I can, you know, let bygones be bygones. But as long as, you know, I think people want to be heard. So as long as you're listening to people, and I will voice my opinions as well as listen to theirs. But the biggest thing is working for a compromise. So the criticisms may be there, but the criticisms also help you see the other side. So that's fine with me. Yep.
And the other thing that you talked about compromise is increasingly difficult to find in this country. Do you think that it's easier on a local level than it is, say, in Congress, where the stakes are higher and the spotlight is brighter?
Oh, it definitely should be. But and it depends on the issues, right? I do feel like we do compromise a lot on the issues, but it's still some of the tougher issues. I still feel like there is a little bit more listening to be done, and remembering that the town isn't all one-sided, that there are a lot of different people in town that have different wishes, desires, and visions, and we have to be able to keep everybody's point of view in mind. But I do think it's easier locally, yes, definitely. At higher state and national level, they've got so many people, you know, waiting in the wings to ask for this favor or that favor. You see all kinds of legislation out there that there's always something buried in there. I never understood why when you're trying to legislate something, why don't you just make it about one issue? Why is there's always underlying things that cause issues with one person or other rejecting the legislation? It just seems like a very inefficient, but I guess that's the way our government has grown up, right? You don't get something for nothing. And that's their way of compromising.
And I thought I'd wrap things up by tying together your career and what you're doing now We talked about how, as a chemist, it takes years for you to get from the starting point to the point where those pharmaceuticals are being given to people and helping people. So you had to develop patience. Maybe it's not quite as long in some cases, but in some cases it may be, like issues such as flooding, which we've been dealing with for years and decades in Cranford. But do you find that that patience that you had to develop in your career, is it all helpful in what you do at the township level?
I think as a person, it has definitely helped me. And so hopefully that as a person, that then does translate into the township work. But the township work obviously is happening on a much shorter time period. So we have to get stuff done more quickly. Decisions are being made more quickly. So I wish there was a little more patience in some of the decisions. But again, we do have to make decisions based on outside forces, right? We have development, we have our affordable housing requirements, obligations for flooding. we're waiting for that, for the government solution, right? That's going to be one of the biggest helps for us. And it's just taking so long to get through. And so that is definitely a trial on the patient, everybody's patience. So hopefully we can get to the finish line on that, but you have to stay in it. You can't give up. Mm-hmm. That's the biggest lesson probably is you may hit a lot of roadblocks, but you just have to keep going, keep trying.
Well, we've been talking on this episode of Cranford Radio with Gina Black. She is one of the township committee members. Gina, thanks so much for taking the time to chat with me.
You're very welcome.